the Orson Welles of obscenity, the prince of puke, and the titan of transgressive film, John Waters. He's a man of many nicknames. John is best known for such films as Hairspray, Pink Flamingos, and Serial Mom. He's also the author of best-selling books like Role Models, Carsick, and Mr. Know-It-All. But being John Waters means always exploring unexplored territory, which leads us to his latest project, his debut novel. It's called Liar Mouth, a feel-bad romance, and it's every bit as filthy, perverse, and hilarious as you could imagine. Maybe even more so. John joined us from his apartment in San Francisco to tell us why, at this age and point in his career, he decided to write a novel.
I decided to write a novel because I wanted to challenge myself. I had never written one, even though I had written lots of movies, which are fiction, of course. I had never written one, and I just wanted to challenge myself, just like I did when I hitchhiked across the country by myself at 66 for another book. Each book is a challenge, but I wanted to be a different kind. You know, I read novels all the time, so it was something I always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Your protagonist is named Marcia Sprinkle. Can you tell us about her?
Well, Marcia is a suitcase thief, and she has a fake chauffeur that is her crime partner, but his salary is he gets to have sex with her once a year. But today is that year, and she, as she said, is no man's used-up calendar. And they get caught during their first scam on this day at the airport, and they have to split up and run. So it's about three generations of women that are sort of hostile to each other, but I'm asking you to make them the heroine of the book. All the women in this book I love, and I think the readers do too, even though they're kind of nasty and they would not be heroines in real life at all, but that's all my work is like that. So my readers won't be surprised that I have a villain as the main character that I hope you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, because that's exactly what happened to me, what I experienced while I was reading it. Marcia comes across, like on the surface, as a very unlikable character, but I found myself really liking her.
Well, she had a reason. You find the reason that's as ludicrous as the rest of the book, as why she is so bitter, and she does change some. I'm not sure she's ever sorry for her behavior, ever. As most of my feminine characters who might be considered villains are never sorry for their behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think that again, that is like something that makes them quite likable. I've heard that you sent Liar Mouth to a sensitivity reader. I didn't even know there was such a thing. What kind of feedback did you get?
Well, I didn't know there was such a thing either until Bruce Wagner, a writer I like very much, who writes He writes very dark novels, so and he told me that his last novel, that they sent it to a sensitivity editor, which publishers all do now, and the sensitivity editor would not let him use the word fat, even though the character was purposely trying to eat as much as she could so she would be the largest human being living on the earth. And he got so furious, he just published this whole novel for free on YouTube. So I knew this was coming. I didn't send it to one. My publisher did. And the sensitivity editor never called us back, never would return phone calls. So she quit or dropped dead. I don't know what happened. But my editor is pretty great, Jonathan Galassi, and my agent, Bill Clegg, and all the women that work for me. I have three generations of women. So we became our own sensitivity editors. And we found that anything touchy, by making it even more ludicrously politically correct, made it funny and made it a satire on that too. So the threat of it maybe made the book better, even though I made it probably more crazy at the same time. But yes, that happens. It's like now also when you're making a movie, they have intimacy counselors if there's a sex scene. Now, I always hated filming sex scenes because it's so embarrassing, but I did have scenes in like a Dirty Shame My movie where extras that never met each other had to make out for like hours in the background for scenes. They'd start laughing, but today, you'd have to have shrinks there practically to advise them how to do it. So it's more complicated these days, definitely. I've always made fun of the rules of whatever supposed outsider community I live in, whether it was hippies to political correctness. And the values are always the same. I make fun of the rules that I have to live to in the world I've chosen to live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you continue to do that with great effect in Liarmouth. In keeping with your reputation as an equal opportunity satirist, your novel includes a trampoline park cult led by Marsha's daughter, Poppy Samuels, and you've got dogs and cats that are dealing with gender and species identity disorders. Can you tell us a bit about these storylines and why you wanted to include them?
Well, the trampoline fanatics, I'm trying to find a minority that is very serious and feels that they are discriminated against, but they have to bounce at all times in real life. So it is, what is the limit? All minorities and cults believe they're right, but is it ever going too far? And I'm not saying, I mean, they're really crazy about bouncing. They have cars that don't have shocks, so they're still bouncing up and down in their cars. Right. They bounce in place when they're standing in restaurants, causing attention and derision. So I'm wondering, are they discriminated against? I mean, so I'm trying to find new minorities that don't exist and have fun with them. The grandmother in the movie, in the book, is a plastic surgeon for pets. And I believe that is around the corner. That will happen. And she is so crazy that she has lifted and changed her dog so many times that it begins to believe it's a cat. And so is transitioning into a cat through facial surgery as a pet.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about what kinds of reaction you're getting to Liarmouth and the cities you're visiting.
It's been great. You know, we've gotten really nice reviews, including the New York Times, which was such a relief and meant a lot to me. The audiences seem younger and younger and younger, which is very encouraging to me. And people have been coming out fully to get their book signed and everything. I do it behind plexiglass, kind of like a bail bonds place, but they slide the book under and then they turn around and do the picture. And it's kind of like the jail booth in Crybaby. They can grind up on it and stuff. It's good for photo ops.
Art imitates life, I guess. Yeah, or this is life imitating art. Yeah, with the current mania for banning book these days, I guess it's only a matter of time until Liarmouth is banned. Maybe it's happened already. Are you looking forward to that?
Well, banning any book today is the best publicity you could ever get it. I doubt many teachers are going to be teaching this in kindergarten to fourth grade. I don't think that's going to be, that's where they get banned so much.
That's true.
I really don't think that'll be a problem. But it is very true that I keep my patriotism on the down low. But America is a great country because I've been allowed to have this career for 50 years. In the 60s, Lenny Bruce went to prison for saying the F word. You know, mm-hmm. I would get the death penalty for this book if it had come out in the 60s. And today it is accepted and it's just American humor. And mm-hmm. I think I'm not mean-spirited. I don't think this book is. I think that I make fun of things I love. So at the same time, I wish it would get banned, I guess. But who would ban it, really? If I had to worry about somebody banning it today, it might be rich college students, not the old censors I had, which were dumb old white people.
That's a good point. Yeah. It was interesting. I was struck by your mentioning that you've been lucky to have the 50-year career you've had here in America. Do you think there's any other country where you could have had the success that you've had here?
France has been the greatest to me always. My last book, Mr. Know-It-All, was really a success there. There were subway ads and everything for it. It was amazing. I think Europe has always been pretty great. I think France has been the closest, and England has always been the closest to my sense of humor, with Italy being the furthest away, because they dub movies and they always change the titles. Like Hairspray there was called Fat is Beautiful. I don't think that's an improvement.
Not at all. And you mentioned you had kind of a slip of the tongue earlier where you accidentally said movie, but this book reads, it reads like a novel, but it also is very, very cinematic. And I'm curious if you have any plans, any desire to turn it into a film?
Well, my agent told me there's been nibbles on film rights, which is kind of hilarious if somebody actually had to buy the film rights from me to get me to make the movie. That would be adding an extra pay level. So I am all for it. It is very cinematic. I can't help. I think that way. Three acts, action. I don't want the people to ever be bored, and I want to have fun. And the main reason with movies or books for me is always to make people smile at things that maybe make them nervous in real life. So, yes, this could be a movie. It would probably get an NC-17 rating, but maybe it's time to finally have an NC-17 hit again at the box office. Midnight Cowboy was. There were hit movies that are NC-17. Now, even to say that word, if you're trying to make a movie, is almost impossible.
Who would you cast as Marsha if this were to be made into a film? Do you have someone in mind?
Well, I mean, you know, Marsh is 40 years old, and who I always think about it is somebody that's a little older, though, as Gina Gershon. I can always imagine. I always kind of follow her.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, that's great. Well, I hope that happens. I really hope that happens. Was it difficult to transition from writing screenplays to writing a novel?
No, it's the same thing. You just have to go in that room every day and do it. It was not different to me. It's a different kind of thing because you can write such detail that you don't have to show in dialogue what you have to do in a movie always. But the process to me is the same. I think up the title. I think up the names of the characters. I think up the characters. And then I go through with one critic who gave me a bad review once for my movie said, and then I think up the plot, my clothesline to hang my filthy wash. And that is true, though, if you think of it that way. It is true. So the plot is what makes a hit. It really does. In a movie or book or anything, you have to have a plot that keeps the page turning. And some there are books that are the opposite of that, where nothing happens, that are beautifully written, that I like. But it's not the kind of... I'm trying to make a book that is just like my movies, that is hopefully makes you laugh and uses some wit and surprises you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I should ask you while I have the chance, it's the 50th anniversary of Pink Flamingos this year. How do you think it holds up?
Well, I just watched it a lot because Criterion is putting out this beautiful new version of it. Wait till you see it. Wait till you see the extras. We went back in the locations today where the people live now that maybe didn't know the movie was made in their house and tell them about it. We've got some really funny stuff. So to me, I'm thrilled. It's worse now than it ever was, you know, political correctness and stuff. It's even kind of nastier and ruder, but more ironic that the National Film Registry named it as one of the historic American films this year. I never thought that would happen. And I'm very proud without any irony that that did happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as well, you should be. And you're doing, I read somewhere, I think that you're doing a commentary track for Criterion, and I don't think it's for Pink Flamingos, some other...
Movie I did it not? For Pink Flamingos. No, I used it. I think I did for that one. I did interviews, but I did one for a long time ago for The Girl Can't Help It. And I did one for Mommy Dearest too. I think those are the two. And I did one for Busby Berkeley's movies too. So I've done different commentaries for other people's films in the past. And then they re-release them in different countries. And that kind of.
Yeah. What's next for John Waters? Possibly a film adaptation of Liarmouth, but...
The next possibilities are, or maybe a movie that I'm trying to see if it's going to get made, and I can't talk about it because it'll curse it, or another novel, or I think those are probably the next two steps, another movie or another novel. And then my usual stuff I always do, which is I host Mosswood Madness, which is a big punk rock festival in Oakland every July 4th. I'm doing that. I have the John Waters Summer Camp, which is almost completely sold out in the fall for the fifth year in Connecticut. I have 20 City Christmas Tour coming up. I'm doing my spoken word show in Spain, London. So I'm on the road all the time. I'm actually busier than I've ever been in my entire life.
Do you like being that busy, or would you rather have a little more downtime?
Yeah. People say to me, why don't you retire? I think, well, I'll probably drop dead if I did. And then maybe I'll drop dead on stage like that comedian did, or on a plane. You know, that would be a good way. Because at least you're going somewhere. Except I'm in first class now, and they always die first. The only way you live on a plane crash is on the tail when it pops off. But I don't want that seat. I'll stay in first class. It took me 40. I didn't fly in first class until I was 40. I ain't going back, even if the tail pops off.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, because last time I talked to you, it was about your exhibit, Indecent Exposures, at the Baltimore Art Museum. And more recently, the Baltimore Art Museum did this cool thing where they allowed the security guards to show their art. Did you have a chance to check
that
out?
It was very good. My friend Amy Elias, it was her idea. She's on the board with me. I did go, and it was a great idea. And one of the guards told a great story in Art Forum about when she was guarding my piece 12 Something and a Dirty Foot, which is one of the most obscene pieces I ever did, how much fun she had watching the older ladies come around the corner and look at it. And she said, they stayed the longest. So guards have really good stories about what it's like to work in a museum, and imagine standing there all day. And some great artists started out that way. I mean, Robert Ryman, who did all white paintings, he was a museum guard. Jeff Koons worked at the desk in MoMA trying to get people to sign up to be members. So artists have started working in museums, and they end up there. It's a great story.
Mm-hmm, definitely. John Waters, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Liarmouth and on continuing to push the envelope until there's nothing left but itsy bitsy, teeny weeny, tattered pieces of paper blowing in the wind.
Oh, what a great quote. Thank you so much.
John Waters is a film director, an actor, and a visual artist. And now he's a novelist. You can find out more about John and his debut novel, Liarmouth, at wpr.org/beta.
99.9% of performers would not like someone throwing them donuts from the audience, especially donuts that were part of a bit that ruined their show. But these guys liked it.
Coming up, Scott Thompson and his fellow kid in the hall, Dave Foley, join us to talk about their hilarious Prime Video revival. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.